he pulled out his BlackBerry. An intern forgot to cancel, and it had already been paid for, so it showed up this morning, along with the driver, Walt. "Hey, Walt," Peter called into the bus. The driver, Walt, who had a short blonde crew cut and looked to be in his late 50s, just lifted an eyebrow at Peter before raising the paper in front of his face, hiding it from view. "Anyway, thought we might as well get some use out of it. Ride to this rally in style." My dad just looked at the bus, a small frown still on his face. "Great," Peter said, as though my dad had agreed, eyes on his phone screen. "I've got to catch up on some emails, but let's plan on leaving in 10, okay?" He looked up and frowned at me as his eyes drifted down to the pajamas I was wearing. "Andy, you're, not coming, are you?"
"No,"
my dad and I said at the same time.
"Gotcha,"
Peter said, relief clearly etched on his face.
"See you later, then."
He climbed back onto the bus, fingers already flying over his keypad. "Bye," I called, even though I had a feeling Peter could no longer hear me. Behind the wheel, Walt lowered his paper and rolled his eyes before raising it again. He'd clearly had more than enough of Peter already.
"Okay,"
my dad said, holding up the garage door opener, smiling at me again.
"Ready to do this?"
We walked back up the driveway, the asphalt warm under my bare feet. I looked back toward the bus for just a second, my dad's huge face giving a confident but trustworthy smile to the street. Despite whatever Peter had said, campaign buses didn't show up by accident. Not unless there was a campaign that would require them. "Dad," I started, right as the garage door opened, and I found myself looking at a yellow 65 Mustang.
"Surprise!"
my dad said, making a little flourish with his arms, smiling big as he looked from me to the car.
"Is that?" I asked, taking a step closer to it. "Is it Mom's?"
It looked just like it, but I couldn't be sure. "Didn't you say you didn't know where it was?"
"I said that, yes,"
my dad said, grinning now, and I could see that he was incredibly pleased with himself.
"I didn't want to give the surprise away. It's been in a storage facility upstate. Your mother asked me to give it to you when you turned 18. But when you started asking about it, I thought maybe now was the moment."
"This is great," I said, a beat too late. "Really great," I repeated, trying to bring some enthusiasm into my voice. "Thank you."
"I've made sure that it's ready to be driven," he said, walking toward the car,
running his hand along the side of it.
"It got fully overhauled, detailed, everything. And I'll have to teach you how to drive stick, but after that, you should be good to go."
He looked at me, and his smile faltered a little. "Awesome," I said, making myself smile, knowing I wasn't reacting the way he wanted me to. I felt terrible about it, but wasn't sure I would be able to fake it. Because there was a bus with his face on it at the bottom of the driveway, reminding me of everything that was going to happen and how little I could do about it. When was he planning to teach me how to drive a stick shift if he was going to be not only working, but campaigning in the fall's election? I looked at the car, pretty sure that it was going to sit there, undriven, for a very long time.
"Sorry,"
my dad said, his excited energy ebbing away as he ran his hand over the back of his neck.
"Maybe this was probably the wrong day. But when they called and said it was ready, I just wanted you to have it."
"No, it's great," I said, feeling even worse than I had a moment ago. "Really, Dad. Thank you."
"Well,"
my dad said,
after an awkward silence had fallen. I hope you like it, Andy.
He turned to head inside, but before he'd reached the door, I blurted out, You're running again, aren't you? It didn't sound like a question, because it wasn't one. All the proof I needed was sitting at the bottom of the driveway. My dad turned back to me.
I told you I haven't decided anything.
You can at least tell me the truth, I said, shaking my head, realizing that I should not be getting mad at him right after he'd given me a present, but knowing that it was happening anyway. My dad raised his eyebrows.
I am, he said. I'm still weighing my options.
It's just, this summer, having you around, it's been really...
Alex!
Peter was standing on the bottom step of the bus, tapping at his watch in a hugely exaggerated manner, like we were involved in a game of long-distance charades.
We have to get going! Walt can't make traffic miracles happen!
Peter stepped back inside the bus, and I looked back at my dad. My dad looked down at me for a moment.
I won't decide to run without talking to you first, okay?
I looked back to the bus, which was contradicting everything he was saying. Right, I said, nodding and looking away from him, my voice flat. There was no point in arguing if he was just going to leave anyway. Sure. 10 minutes later, I sat in my mother's Mustang as the bus made a painfully slow 3-point, in this case more like an 18-point turn, before heading back down the road. I realized as it departed that Toward the Future was printed on the back of the bus as well. And the very slogan seemed to mock me forever doubting that this was the choice my dad would make. I'd gotten into the passenger side out of habit. I'd been years away from driving the last time I was in this car. I shut the door behind me and looked around. I had hoped, in some absurd way, that it would still somehow feel like my mom. That even after 5 years in storage, her perfume would be lingering, or there would be the feeling I always had in this car with my mother. That adventure was somehow just around the corner. That any minute now, exciting things were going to happen. I sat there for just a moment, looking through the motes of dust and the shafts of sunlight to the empty seat where my mother should have been sitting, the view I'd always had. When that got to be too much, I slid over to the driver's side, pulling the seat forward and placing my hands on the steering wheel for the first time. I flipped down the visor mirror, expecting the keys to drop down into my lap, because that's where they always seem to be in the movies. But there was nothing there, and a quick glance around the car didn't show them to me either. I realized as I looked that I actually wasn't sure how the car had gotten here, if it had been driven or towed. I opened the glove compartment and started flipping through the papers, mostly what appeared to be sale and insurance documents, and found them toward the back, the car keys on the keychain that I'd gotten her for Mother's Day when I was 9, a bright purple heart dangling from a chain. I smiled as I held it up now, the silver of the chain catching the light and reflecting it back at me. When I'd bought it from a mall kiosk 8 years ago, I had been convinced that there had never been anything so beautiful. Now, though, I could see just how tacky it was, and how wonderful my mother had been to carry it around for years after that anyway. Just because I had given it to her. I started to put the papers back inside the glove compartment when I saw my name. I started flipping through them more slowly, and there, almost at the end of the stack, I saw it. A plain white square envelope with my name written across the front of it. In my mother's handwriting. I just stared at it, holding it with both hands. not wanting to even breathe in case this somehow went away or disappeared. I looked at my name on the front of the envelope in the handwriting I hadn't seen in so long. The looping A, the circle over the I. I turned the card over, and what I saw there made me let out a short laugh with a sob mixed into it. Across the back flap, she'd drawn the Mustang, with a horse in sunglasses sitting in the driver's seat, one elbow out the window. "Lots of horsepower," she'd written below it, and I laughed, even though I could feel tears prickling at the corners of my eyes. The drawing wasn't as sharp as the one she usually did. The lines were a little unsure and wavy, and I knew just by looking at it that this was one of the ones she'd made toward the end, before even picking up a pencil hurt her hands too much, before she lost all the energy she'd once used for things like drawing Mustangs in Mustangs. I took a deep breath, then slid my hand under the flap and pulled out the note, which had been written on her stationery. "Molly Walker" was printed across the top in raised letters, and I ran my finger over them once before I bit my lip and started to read. "Andy, hello, my love. Happy 18th birthday. I so wish that I could be there to celebrate with you. I have loved this car, and I'm so happy it's yours now. I hope you'll use it for so much more than getting around. This car, like you, is made for extraordinary things. So have adventures. Go exploring. Drive around at midnight. Feel the wind running through your hair. Life is so short, my darling. And there's no day like today. Drive safe. Have fun. I love you so much. But of course you knew that already. Mom. P.S. I know you already are, but take care of your dad for me. He needs help sometimes, even if he's bad at showing it." I set the paper down in my lap and wiped under my eyes, not trying to get myself to stop crying, just trying to dry my face off a little. I looked down at the note, still a little unable to believe it had happened, that my mom had left something behind for me after all. I read through it again, still crying, when one line jumped out at me, "No day like today." And I knew, just like that, what I had to do. I had to find Clark and tell him how I felt, how I really felt, and see if he might want to give it another chance. Even if he said no, at least I would have tried. At least I would have tried to be as honest as I could be. Because right now, I was just running away when things got too real. I carefully put her note back in its envelope, folded over the flap, and placed it back in the glove compartment, closing it, and then resting my hand there for a moment. Then I got out of the car and ran full speed into the house. 15 minutes later, I glanced at my reflection in my bedroom mirror and decided it was the best I could do under the circumstances. I hadn't wanted to take much time, but even I knew that when you're going to tell someone that you love them and want them back, it's probably best not to do it in the t-shirt you've slept in, especially if you've stolen it from them. I'd thrown on a skirt and a white t-shirt after rejecting almost everything else in my closet, since nothing seemed right for this, even though I had never done this before and had no idea what one actually wore for it. But I could feel my heart pounding as I ran a brush through my hair and slicked on some lip gloss. I needed to do this now, soon, before I lost my nerve, before I actually started to think about what I was going to do. I stepped into my flip-flops, then took the stairs two at a time. I had a very strong feeling this was a have-in-person conversation, and even though I knew I probably should, I didn't want to call first. Didn't want him to be able to tell me not to talk to him anymore. I wanted to see him, to talk with him face to face, to tell him how much I missed him. I launched myself out the front door and hurried to my car. I just tossed my bag in the front passenger seat when I saw someone walking up the driveway. I lifted my hand to cut the glare, then let it fall when I saw it was Palmer. I stood by my car, not really sure what to do. My heart was hammering as I raised a hand in a wave. I half expected that at any moment Palmer would change her mind, but she kept coming toward me until we were only a few feet apart. "Hi," Palmer said. She gave me a nervous smile, then stuck her hands in the back pockets of her jean shorts. "Sorry for just showing up like this." "No, it's fine," I said, smiling back at her, hoping she hadn't come over here to tell me that she'd decided we could never be friends again. "You know you can always come by." Palmer nodded, and I took a breath. But before she could speak, I jumped in. "I really, really messed up," I said. "I'm so sorry." "I know it was coming from a good place," Palmer said, shaking her head. "But..." "I know," I said. "I was trying to control everything because the thought of not having you guys..." I let out a shaky breath. "But I shouldn't have interfered like that." Palmer nodded. "I know you were trying to help in your own very not helpful way," she said, and I smiled. "But I overreacted. And I'm sorry, Andy." We just looked at each other for a moment, and then Palmer reached out to hug me, and I hugged her back, tight, neither of us moving for a few moments. When we broke apart, it felt like I'd just put down a really heavy burden I'd been carrying for too long, like something had finally been set right. "What's happening with them?" I asked when we stepped apart, hoping somehow that would have worked everything out. Palmer shook her head, and those hopes were dashed. "Bree's trying," she said, shaking her head. "She's apologized over and over again, but Toby won't listen. I've barely seen her." She looked over at my car and seemed to notice the keys in my hand for the first time. "Wait, are you leaving?" "No," I said, then hesitated. "Well, kind of. I was going to go talk to Clark."
"Clark?"
Palmer said, her eyes widening.
"Really?
I was sorry to hear about you guys." "Well," I started, taking a deep breath. "Here's the thing. I need to go tell him that I love him."
"Andy!"
Palmer looked at me like she wasn't exactly sure who I was. A beep sounded from my bag on the passenger seat, and we both looked over at it, just as another one sounded. "Just a second," I said, leaning in and pulling it out. "It's Topher," I said, looking at the screen, turning it so I could read it in the glare. Palmer raised a disapproving eyebrow at me.
"Topher?"
"No," I said immediately, then realized this wasn't entirely correct. "Well, kind of. A little, but never again." Palmer frowned, and I realized just how much there was to catch her up on. "I'll tell you later."
"What's he want now?" she asked, folding her arms over her chest.
I stared at the texts, trying to make sense of them. "I'm not sure." "Topher."
"Hey, don't let your dad do the campaign thing today. Heard my mom saying something. Think it's a bad idea."
I looked at Palmer, who was reading over my shoulder.
"Okay, what is wrong with him?"
she asked, shaking her head.
He can't be bothered to give you, like, a smidge more information?
I'll call him, I said, pulling up his contact info, wondering why this was happening now. I was supposed to be halfway to Clark's by now, practicing what I was going to say to him, gathering all the courage I could muster. I wasn't supposed to be trying to decode Topher's texts. But I had a not-so-great feeling as I waited for his phone to ring. Topher almost never told me things like this, mentioned things that could impact either of our parents.
"Hey," he said, picking up on the fourth ring.
"Hey," I said, pulling my phone back from my ear to look at the texts once more.
"I got your texts."
"I figured," he said. "Hang on." There was a small pause, and then I noticed that things had gotten much quieter on Topher's end, like he'd just stepped inside or gotten into his car or something.
"What's he saying?" Palmer whispered, poking my arm.
"Nothing yet," I whispered back to her.
"Sorry," Topher said, his voice much clearer now. "Look, I shouldn't even be doing this, but I heard my mom saying something last night. Something about how the governor is just using your dad as a prop."
"A prop?" I repeated, feeling myself frown.
"What do you mean?"
"I guess people have been saying he's not aggressive enough. So when your dad's on stage, he's basically going to point to him as an example of everything that's wrong with politics."
"To his face?" I asked, feeling sick. I couldn't even think about what this would do to Peter's plan. If this happened before my dad's announcement, his press conference, the whole narrative Peter was crafting wouldn't work.
Which was maybe what the governor was counting on.
"I think so," Topher finally said after a silence. "From what I could hear, at least."
"Okay," I said, nodding, trying to figure out what to do with this information.
"I'm going to call my dad."
I looked over at Palmer, who mouthed,
"What?"
at me.
"Probably a good idea," Topher said.
Silence fell between us for a moment. And I thought back to how we'd left it, how awkward it had been, and then realized that he had texted me anyway.
"Thank you," I said, hoping he would know that I meant it.
"Sure," Topher said, then, "I'll see you, Andy."
"What's going on?" Palmer asked when I'd hung up. "Is your dad okay?"
"I don't think so." I looked down at my phone once more. "Topher said this thing he's doing today, this rally, might not actually be so good."
"Wait, so he's running again?"
"Apparently," I said, as I pulled up my dad's number and called it. It didn't even ring, just went right to voicemail, and I suddenly remembered a campaign tic of my dad's. He turned his phone off every time he was going to be interacting with voters. He always said he didn't want to be tempted to take a call or look at a text or do anything that might be read as not giving them his undivided attention. "His phone's off," I said, scrolling through my contacts again.
"I'll just call Peter."
But Peter's number went right to a recording that told me the number was no longer in service. I lowered my phone, realizing that Peter must have gotten a new phone during my dad's leave of absence.
"No good?"
Palmer asked, as I lowered my phone and bit my lip.
"No,"
I said, looking at the time. I didn't even know where this event was in New York, but it must have been close-ish. If it was starting in less than 2 hours, it couldn't have been up in Albany or anything. I tried to do the driving math and realized that there was no way I'd be able to go stop my dad and then get back home to see Clark before he left for his bookstore event. Because it was looking like I'd have to go up there, I wasn't going to let my dad just get attacked like that. and there didn't seem to be any other way of contacting him. I let out a breath and turned to Palmer. Up for a road trip? Palmer grinned at me.
Always.
20 minutes later, I looked across at Palmer from the passenger seat. She was driving, and had been since we'd stopped by the gatehouse. I'd taken 3 wrong turns just trying to get us out of Sandwich Woods, which was when Palmer suggested that maybe I should just ride for a while. It wasn't a bad idea, especially since my thoughts were spinning triple time. We'd done some preliminary research into the governor's schedule, only to find out that he was speaking at 3 events today. Rather than waste time, and also because it was getting really hot out on the driveway, we'd gone inside to see if we could find anything about the location of today's event in my dad's study. I'd gone to my dad's desk to try and find any information, while Palmer had made herself useful, mostly by looking at all the paraphernalia on the bookcases. His laptop was on the desk, and even though I was pretty sure that I would need a password, I opened it up just in case I could get into his calendar. To my surprise, it wasn't locked, and there was a window open to a fan site for Clark's books. I smiled at that, then minimized it, only to see a document with my dad's speech for today. I didn't get any further than glancing at his opening remarks before I minimized that, too. I started to pull up his calendar when I realized I was looking at the background image on his screen. I knew it. I knew it better than almost anything, but I'd never seen it like this before. I found myself sitting down in his leather chair and leaning forward, trying to understand what I was seeing. Because it was Stars Fell on Alexandra, but not the painting. It was a photograph. It looked like it had been taken at early dusk, with long blue shadows everywhere. There was no flash, but you could still see details. You could see my yellow Converse and their broken laces, and you could see that I was looking off to the side, just like I was in the painting, but that I was looking at my father. He was standing just at the edge of the frame, waving at me, and I was smiling at him like I'd never been so happy to see someone. Clark had been right after all. I had been looking at something, at someone. I'd been looking at my dad. My mom had wanted her last work to be of the two of us, in frame, together.
"Did you find it?" Palmer asked, making me jump and shaking me out of this reverie.
She walked around behind me to see what I was looking at, and I heard her draw in a breath.
"Is that?"
she asked, and I nodded. "Wow," she said softly, shaking her head.
"We'll have to tell Tobes. She'll flip."
The words seemed to hang in the air for a moment before I cleared my throat and said,
"Okay. Goals. Address."
It had been the first item in my dad's calendar for today, and we'd grabbed bottles of water for the car and hit the road. Now I looked down at my phone, holding my hair back in one hand to keep it out of my face. Palmer was a windows-down driver. It was one of the fights she always had with Bree, who liked to keep the Grape Escape air-conditioned and as close to the temperature of a meat locker as possible. Normally, I liked a windows-down drive as well, but it was hot enough that it was beginning to feel like a hairdryer was blowing in on us.
"How are we on time?" Palmer asked, glancing over at me.
"We should be there in 45," I said, looking down at the map on my phone.
"Will that be enough?"
I nodded. "It should be." I twisted my hair up into a knot, pulling it through on itself. "I know it goes against your belief system, but do you think we could turn the AC on for just a bit?" Palmer sighed and nodded, then put up both our windows as I cranked the air conditioning as high as it would go. "Every now and then you have to concede defeat," she said, angling her driver's side vent so that it was pointing right toward her.
"So what about Clark?" Palmer asked, after we'd been driving in silence for the amount of time it took to pass 2 rest stops.
I looked over at her. I'd already told her about my revelation at the party and given her the bare outline of my mom's note. That one still felt a little too raw for me to go into much detail about it, but I knew I'd tell her everything soon.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean, what now?" she asked, looking over at me for just a second before focusing back on the highway. I wasn't worried like I would have been if Toby were driving. Palmer was the best driver out of all of us, by far.
"What's the plan?"
I opened my mouth, then closed it when I realized I didn't have an answer. For the first time in a long time, I didn't have a plan. And I didn't want one. "I'm going to play it by ear, I think," I said. I just wanted to tell Clark how I felt, without practicing or preparing anything. Palmer looked at me, a smile spreading over her face.
"Hi, I'm sorry, have we met?" she asked. "I'm looking for Andy Walker."
"Ha," I said, smiling back at her. "I'm not going to plan anything out. I'm just going to talk to him tonight and see how it goes, when he's back from his signing."
"Or,"
Palmer said, looking significantly over at me.
"Or what?"
"Or just go to New Hampshire and tell him at his book thing."
"New Jersey," I corrected. "And I'm not going to do that."
"Why not?" she asked, changing lanes smoothly and speeding up slightly.
"Because," I said, shaking my head. "It's a work thing for him. And it's in public. I don't want to tell him in front of a ton of people."
My voice trailed off as I remembered the argument Clark and I had had about Carl and Marjorie and the declaration of love in the crowded tavern. I closed my eyes for just a moment, remembering how seriously Clark had seemed to take it, how he'd fought for it.
"Oh, God," I said hollowly as I opened my eyes, realizing what I had to do.
"I think I have to go to Clark's reading." Palmer grinned at me.
"Okay, so we'll tell your dad and then we'll head to...
New Jersey," I filled in for her. "Do you have a mental block about this state or something?"
"New Jersey," Palmer said, talking over me like I hadn't said anything.
"You don't have to come."
"You think I'd miss this?"
She looked at me incredulously.
"Not a chance."
"Thank you." She nodded, and I watched as she tapped her fingers on the closed driver's side window, then brought her hands back to 10 and 2, then moved them again.
"What is it?" I asked.
She glanced over at me before looking back at the road.
"Bree and Toby," she said, shaking her head. "We have to fix it."
I nodded. From the way she said it, though, I could tell that she had about as much of an idea for how to do this as I did.
"Yeah," I agreed. "But how?"
The question hung between us in the car for a moment, before I reached over and turned on the radio, sensing that both of us needed a break from our thoughts. When we were 10 minutes away from the fairground where the event was being held, something started happening to the car. The engine was making a groaning sound, and though Palmer had started driving more slowly, it didn't seem to be helping.
"What is this?" I asked, leaning over to try and see the dash. "Why are you braking my car?"
"Do you think it knew you got another one?" she asked. "And so it's mad or something?"
"It's probably nothing," I said, hoping that if I said it out loud, it would turn out to be true.
"Right?"
Palmer frowned as she looked down at the dash, tapping it once.
This is moving over toward the H, she said. It's the temperature thing. I have a feeling that's not good.
It's probably just because it's hot, I said, nodding, glad to have an explanation for this that made sense.
It's just really hot out. I'm sure it'll get better once it has a chance to cool down.
Maybe, Palmer said, still frowning at the gauges, most of which I'd never paid any attention to before now. Right as we turned into the parking area, however, the check engine light came on, which didn't seem like a good sign to either of us. We both got out of the car, and I felt myself wince. Things seemed to be even hotter here than they'd been at home.
Go find your dad, Palmer said, leaning against the car and pulling out her phone. I'm going to call Fitz and see what he says about the engine. He's the only one in my family who knows anything about cars.
Great, I said, shouldering my bag and heading toward the area where a stage had been set up.
I'll meet you back here, I called as I started to run toward the stage, then stopped when I realized that this was walk-fast weather, not running weather. I'd been around enough of these things that I knew my way around, but there was nobody behind the stage where the sound guys were running mic checks, and the assembled crowd was still aimlessly milling around, people trying to find as much shade as possible, or lining up by the food trucks. So it was clear that I wasn't too late, but I also didn't know where I was going to find my father. I turned in a circle, as though I would see a labeled politician holding area or something, when I saw two campaign buses parked on the other side of the street, and realized that maybe I just had.
I don't understand, my dad said, frowning, as he stood outside the bus with me.
He'd been inside with Peter, enjoying the air conditioning and reading through his speech, and I was just glad that I'd met Walt earlier this morning, since he had recognized me and opened up the doors, rather than calling security when I started yelling about how I needed to get onto the bus.
Topher said this?
I nodded, then had to look away from the very strange optical illusion of my dad standing in front of a giant picture of his head.
I don't think you should do this, I said, looking back toward the stage where things now seemed to be happening, the crew guys moving with more purpose as they hustled around the stage, even in this heat.
And you came all the way here? Just to tell me?
Of course, I said, and just for a second remembered the picture on his computer, the moment my mother had captured.
Wouldn't you have done it for me? I asked, hoping I knew the answer but needing to hear it anyway.
If I was about to get hurt?
Of course,
he said, without even a moment of hesitation.
You know I would.
There was a note for me in the car, I said, and my dad looked at me, suddenly going very still. From Mom. She told me to take care of you. I felt like I'd already spent far too much of this morning crying, but nevertheless, tears were starting to flood my eyes. My dad smiled, his chin trembling just the smallest bit.
You do, sweetheart, he said.
And I started to cry for real as he wrapped his arm around my shoulder and pulled me into a hug.
Of course you do.
Alex?
We turned around to see Peter coming down the steps of the bus, his frown deepening when he saw me.
Hey, Andy, when did you get here?
He didn't wait for me to reply, just turned to my dad and said,
They're ready for you.
My dad looked at me and then nodded.
All right.
Wait, I said, stepping into Peter's path like that would somehow stop this from happening.
You're still going through with it?
My dad gave me a smile.
It'll be okay, he said, and nodded toward the stage. Want to come watch?
I shook my head. I'd come all this way. I'd done this instead of talking to Clark when I still might have been able to. And my dad was going to go ahead and do this?
No, I said, taking a step away. I wasn't sure I could stand to see my dad get humiliated, especially when I'd come so far to try to stop it. I have to go to New Jersey.
Oh, my dad said, eyebrows flying up. Why?
Alex, Peter said, gesturing toward the stage, speaking in his I mean business voice.
We're on a schedule.
I'll see you at home, I said, giving my dad a nod. Good luck. I turned around then and started walking back to the car, wondering why I'd even tried if it had made absolutely no difference. I got turned around in the parking lot, the heat coming off the baking asphalt messing with my sense of direction as I turned down one wrong row after another. Finally, Palmer dropped a pin at her location, and I was able to track her down. I'd heard the sound system come on during my third wrong turn, though I was too far away to hear anything specific, which I was glad about. I didn't need to hear the governor of New York making a fool of my dad, especially when I hadn't been able to stop it from happening.
Bad news, Palmer said, hopping off the trunk when she saw me coming.
Me too, I said, nodding to her. You go first.
So Fitz says the car overheated, she says. He thinks we probably need to tow it, or at the very least add coolant if we have it, which we don't, or water to the engine, but only after we've let the car cool down.
I felt my stomach sink. How long is that going to take?
Palmer winced. He said to give it a couple of hours. But,
I know, she said, shaking her head.
What happened with your dad?
Nothing good, I said with a sigh, wondering how it was possible to feel this exhausted when it was just a little after noon.
He didn't listen to me and just...
I stopped when I heard my phone ringing in my bag. I pulled it out and saw it was my dad calling.
Hello? I asked, utterly confused, wondering if it was Peter or someone calling from his phone, because I was pretty sure my dad was still on stage at the moment.
Hey,
my dad said, causing me to look over toward the stage, as though I could see anything there except faint dots.
What?
I started.
How are you?
I'll tell you in a minute, he said. Where are you?
I'm in the parking lot with Palmer, I said.
Oh, Palmer's here. And the car overheated, and I really need to get to New Jersey. I trailed off, still trying to grasp what was happening.
I still don't understand what's going on.
So you need a ride?
My dad said, and I could practically hear the smile in his voice.
Want to use mine?
So this is a campaign bus, Palmer said from her seat by the row that surrounded a table, where strategy sessions usually took place.
She ran her hand over the tabletop and nodded her approval.
I like it.
Explain it to me again, I said, leaning more into the aisle. My dad was sitting across from me, in the aisle seat as well. He and Walt had picked us up in the Toward the Future bus, and my dad had called AAA to tow my car back to Stanwich. Peter was not on the bus, and I was pretty sure my dad had left him back at the fairgrounds, which Walt seemed particularly happy about. My dad smiled and shook his head.
I told you, you should have stayed to hear it.
So, you didn't let the governor say anything? I said, now really regretting that I hadn't stayed, if only to see the look on Peter's face when things started going off script.
You just started talking?
I said I had an announcement,
my dad said,
and one that couldn't wait.
People are talking about it online, Palmer said, scrolling through her phone, and my dad let out a short laugh.
I'm not surprised,
he said. Me either. I was still trying to get my head around it. My dad had given the speech he'd planned to give all along, the one that Peter had no knowledge of, the speech that said he would finish out his term but would not run for another one, that he wanted to spend more time with his family. So what now? I asked. My dad took a deep breath and gave me a smile.
I'm not sure, he said. I'm going to finish out my term, and then I guess I'll figure it out.
So I bet Peter's freaking out right about now, I said, not quite able to stop myself from smiling. My dad nodded.
Probably,
he said, then shrugged.
He'll get over it, and if he doesn't, it's not really my issue any longer.
Congressman, Walt called from the front of the bus.
I'm going to need an address, unless you just want me to go back to the pickup spot. Coming,
my dad said, ruffling my hair like he used to when I was little, then making his way to the front of the bus. I crossed back to join Palmer at the table. She was looking like I felt, a little stunned by everything that was happening.
Busy day,
she said, shaking her head. And I smiled as I sat in the seat across from her. I nodded.
It has been.
And we're still going to New Jersey, Palmer said, fixing me with a look that let me know she wasn't going to let me out of this.
We'll just get my car and I'll drive us.
I nodded, pulling out my phone and looking at the time. I'd found the address of the bookstore on Clark's website and mapped it from Stanwich. It was still another hour to get there. It would be cutting it close, but we could almost make it. I wasn't letting myself think about what would happen once I got there. For the moment, it was enough to know that we were going. Okay, I said, nodding a few more times than I needed to.
Okay.
So, I was thinking about Bree and Toby, Palmer said, and I looked up at her, putting my phone away, glad to have some distraction from what we were heading toward.
I think we need to get them to sit down together and talk this out.
I agree, I said, but I don't see that happening, do you? Palmer sighed and bit her lip. I mean, even if we get them both to the diner or wherever, when Toby sees Bree, she's just going to leave.
Or you, Palmer pointed out. They're both still pretty mad at you.
Right, I said. We sat in silence for a moment, the weight of the situation, the hopelessness of it, seeming to press down on me like a physical force.
We need to get them together, Palmer said slowly. Somewhere they can't leave.
I nodded, thinking that sounded good if we could work it out. I suddenly remembered Rio Bravo and all the secrets and resentments that had come bubbling to the surface when the men were stuck in the jail together. We needed that, but hopefully with less singing.
That would be good, I said. But
I looked over at Palmer to see that she was looking at the bus with newfound interest.
What?
I asked. Palmer smiled at me.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I had not expected, when I'd woken up that morning, that by the afternoon I would be in this situation. In all the vague ways I'd imagined my day going, maybe getting a coffee and picking up some dog walking shifts, this had not been one of the options. Riding in a bus with my dad's face on it,
barreling across New Jersey, en route to tell Clark I was in love with him, while trying to get Toby and Bree to talk to each other, had been nowhere in my list of possibilities. And yet, here we were. We weren't in the Mustang, but I had a feeling my mom would have approved. "Say something," I said to Bree, who sat across the bus table from me, her arms folded, looking hard out at the window like she couldn't hear me.
"I'll say something," Toby snapped from her seat across the aisle. "This is kidnapping. You can't just force people to be on a bus together."
"Nobody forced you onto the bus," Palmer pointed out from where she was standing in the aisle between Toby and Bree's rows. "You came on voluntarily." Both of them scoffed in unison, and Palmer and I exchanged a look. When we'd asked my dad if this would be possible, leaving out for the moment that Bree and Toby were currently not speaking to each other, we'd made it seem like we all just wanted to ride down to Clark's bookstore event together, and that Bree and Toby were excited by the idea of being on a campaign bus. My dad had bought this and checked with Walt, who just shrugged and said he'd been paid for the whole day, so as long as we didn't go over the mileage, we were okay, and that it didn't make any difference to him where we went. Once we'd gotten the go-ahead, Palmer and I had strategized. When we'd decided on the plan, we'd pick up Bree and Toby as we went through Stanwich en route to New Jersey, and they'd just have to work it out as we all rode down to the bookstore together. We'd realized we had to actually get them both on the bus together in order for this to work. We'd finally decided to go with the nuclear option, Palmer telling both of them that she and Tom had broken up and that she needed to see them at once. Palmer had knocked on every piece of wood on the bus afterward, convinced she was somehow jinxing her relationship by lying about it. But we knew this was the only thing that would get both of them to agree. They'd figured out the ruse pretty quickly, but there's not a whole lot you can do when you're riding on a campaign bus that's flying down the New Jersey Turnpike, with a driver who refuses to stop at the rest stops. My dad had figured out that Palmer and I had been doing some creative embellishing, but had only told me sternly that we'd talk about it when we got home, and had gone to the front of the bus to sit with Walt, casting occasional glances into the back of the bus and shaking his head. I got the sense that I'd probably be grounded again in the near future. But I also had the feeling, like on the night of the scavenger hunt when he got to drive like James Bond, that he was secretly enjoying this. Bree and Toby were still refusing to talk to each other. And as the miles whipped by outside the window, I found myself getting more and more nervous. What if getting them trapped in a space together wasn't enough? What if we really weren't going to be able to get past this?
"Guys," Palmer said in her best reasonable voice, "Andy and I really think that if you just talk to each other..."
Toby just shook her head. And Bree looked down at her hands.
"I mean, we're stuck on a bus together," I pointed out. "We might as well make the best of it."
"We're stuck on this bus because of you," Toby snapped. "Don't make it seem like it's just a big coincidence."
"I know," I said, looking between them. "And I'm really sorry, guys. I truly am. I shouldn't have interfered like I did. I just wanted us to be okay."
Toby let out a short, humorless laugh, and Bree stared hard out the window, neither of them speaking. Palmer and I exchanged a look, but there didn't seem to be a ton to say after that. Silence fell, while I tried to think of a new approach we could take, something that would shake this up.
"Toby!" Bree said 10 minutes later, breaking the silence. "Please, just talk to me."
Toby folded her arms tighter across her chest,
and I saw Palmer take a breath, like she was about to jump in, but I caught her eye and shook my head, hoping that maybe if we gave her enough space, she'd come around.
"What do you want me to say?" Toby finally asked. "I don't have anything to say to you."
"You can't," Bree said, then stopped and tried again. "I never meant to hurt you, T. You have to know that. It was the last thing I wanted."
"And yet," Toby said, and I could hear the anger in her voice, the way she was biting off the ends of her words. "Guess what happened?
Gosh, who could have foreseen that totally bizarre occurrence?" "I'm so sorry," Bree said, and I could see that she was on the verge of tears. "I wish you would just listen to me."
"You can say what?" Toby snapped. "That you went ahead and did something you knew would break my heart, but you didn't care enough about me to stop? Or even to tell me what was going on so I didn't have to find out like that?"
"Tobe," Palmer said, leaning toward her.
"Maybe..."
"Although why am I even surprised?" Toby asked, shaking her head. "Of course this is happening to me. Of course, not only can I not be with the guy I like, but he falls for my best friend."
She looked right at me, and I felt myself drawing back. "You don't believe I'm cursed," she said with a short, unhappy laugh. "But what the hell do you call this?
I'm the only one of us in this situation. Everyone else is happy and in love with their perfect boyfriends, and I'm alone, just like I always am."
Toby's voice broke, and she wrapped her arms around herself and looked out the window, her chin shaking.
"Well, Andy's not," Palmer said, clearly trying to lighten the mood.
"That's one of the reasons we're going to New Jersey."
"We're going to New Jersey?" Toby asked, closing her eyes for just a moment.
"Perfect.
Tell me what I can do," Bree said, leaning across the table toward her, and I could see she was getting blotchy, the way she did when she was trying to stop herself from really crying.
"There has to be something. We can't just keep not talking like this. I miss you so much."
I thought I saw something in Toby's face soften for just a moment, but then it was gone.
"Okay," she said, turning to face Bree and folding her arms. "Are you still with Wyatt?"
"Toby," I started, but she was already talking over me.
"Are you still sleeping with Wyatt?" she asked, and from the front of the bus I heard my dad clear his throat and then start asking Walt very loud questions about the bus's gas mileage.
"Look," Bree said, leaning toward Toby. "If you just listen..."
"You want to be friends again?" Toby asked. "You want to stop fighting?"
"Yes," Bree said, her eyes searching Toby's face. "I do."
"Fine," Toby said. "If you break up with him, we can be friends again."
Bree drew back.
"That's not fair."
Toby let out a short laugh, the kind with absolutely no happiness in it.
"What's not fair is that you snuck around behind my back and stole the guy I was in love with. That's what's not fair."
"You weren't in love with him," Bree yelled. "You were in love with the idea of him, just like you always are."
"Excuse me?"
Toby asked, her voice rising as well. I glanced to the front of the bus, worried, but if Walt seemed bothered by the fact that he was driving a bus full of teenage girls, two of whom were screaming at each other, it did not seem to be fazing him in the slightest.
"Guys," Palmer said, her voice soothing. "Maybe just..."
"A real friend wouldn't ask me to break up with him,"
Bree said, shaking her head.
I can't believe you're asking me to do that, Toby.
A real friend wouldn't have done it in the first place, Toby shot back, and I could hear the raw pain.